Today, is Brexit reshaping politics in parts of Northern Ireland? And in opinion, Guardian columnist Suzanne Moore on the questions Prince Andrew still needs to answer. Brexit has been difficult for Northern Ireland, cutting through questions of identity.
I'm British.
I'm Irish.
So I'm staying British.
The fact that a majority voted to remain masks the fact that the European question, like so much else here, divides along religious lines. The vast majority of Catholics, who tend to favour a united Ireland, voted to stay in the EU. Most Protestants, who strongly identify as British, back leave. But for these Brexiteer unionists, things have become complicated, because Boris Johnson's deal could mean their worst fear is realised, a new border down the Irish Sea.
But at the same time, you're still wanting to put a border up in the Irish Sea. Why should that be allowed?
That dynamic has laid down a fascinating political race in East Belfast, a traditionally working-class Protestant community. Here, a liberal centrist party believes that Brexit may have provided an opening to a new type of politics.
Brexit is not an orange versus green issue, and I'm not an orange or green politician.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, is Brexit reshaping politics in East Belfast?
East Belfast is one of the most Protestant constituencies in Northern Ireland, and therefore traditionally one of the most unionist slash loyalist constituencies.
The Guardian's Ireland correspondent Rory Carroll and Today in Focus producer Mithili Rao travelled to the constituency to speak to voters.
Half of it is working class, somewhat gritty industrial areas, which is, these were people who worked in the Holland and Wolff shipyards.
The whole of Belfast seemed to be at the welcome to Princess Margaret at the famous Harland and Wolff shipyard. Her Royal Highness had crossed the water to launch the Royal Mail Line's new vessel.
In factories, going back a century, this was really the industrial heartland of Northern Ireland. And the other half of the constituency is more leafy, middle class, but also traditionally unionist. And so this is why in election after election, you've had unionist candidates returned. But there has been a change here. I mean, everybody knows there are kind of Republicans and Nationalists on one side who favour United Ireland, and then there are Unionists, Loyalists who want to remain British and preserve Northern Ireland's position in the UK. But there is actually a middle ground that's always existed and yet often been either invisible or basically inaudible of people here who don't identify as either Unionist or Nationalist. And they've actually become increasingly vocal and effective politically. They've actually had a breakthrough earlier this year in European and local elections. Their leader, Naomi Long, was elected an MEP.
The people who voted for me came together from right across the community, regardless of unionism, regardless of nationalism, regardless of all those labels. They came together behind Alliance to send a message.
Their councillors did extremely well, including in East Belfast. And there's a sense that this could be their time and that a new generation of people in Northern Ireland fed up with old kind of tribal sectarian labels are now asserting themselves. And East Belfast is a great testbed of that.
What did you see when you walked around?
There are signs of gentrification and artistic cultural revival. In fact, there's a C.S. Lewis Square named after the author of the Chronicles of Narnia, who actually grew up in the area. And you can see signs of hipsters, which is a new thing for East Belfast as well. And so, you know, there are exciting new ventures. There's a literary festival, arts festival here. Yet at the same time, we were strolling down the Newton Irons Road, and you see murals glorifying paramilitaries all over, including a new mural.
And it says, "The prevention of the erosion of our identity is now our priority. East Belfast Battalion."
somewhat kind of sinister iconography of two masked men of balaclavas cradling AK-47s. And in this case, the message is we will fight to preserve our identity.
You mentioned the Alliance Party's success in recent European elections, but their growth and popularity isn't a new thing. Naomi Long first won the seat in 2010.
Naomi Long, 12,839. I declare that Naomi Long has been elected to serve in Parliament for the East Belfast constituency.
Before the DUP took it back in 2015. You went to see her to find out if her party could benefit from the changes caused by Brexit. Tell me about meeting her.
Naomi Long lives in a lovely house in one of the leafier, nicer parts of
Hello.
East Belfast.
Hi. Do you want to come on? This is Daisy, my dog.
And she greeted us, and she has her little dog at her heels. And as you can imagine, she's pretty hyper busy campaigning all over Northern Ireland for her other Alliance candidates. And she not only leads, but embodies the Alliance Party. And some people actually view the party almost as a one-woman band. And she gives quite an impassioned view of how that she kind of came of age here growing up in the Troubles. And then she was at university in the mid-1990s when the peace process led to the Good Friday Agreement. And so she entered politics on this kind of wave of optimism, which now feels somewhat kind of retro and tinged in sepia.
I never set out to be a politician. In fact, I trained as a civil engineer. When I graduated from university, it was 1994, so the first ceasefires had just happened here. As somebody who had grown up with the Troubles as the backdrop to my life, and for the first time in going to university, had experienced integrated education, I realised that we had far more in common than actually divided us as people, that we wanted the same things out of life, and it's about how we deliver those in a society that has become so divided, where when one side feels that they're doing well, the other side automatically feels it's a loss. And for me, it doesn't have to be that way. It's about redefining politics so that these things are win-win.
She spoke about growing up when there'd be sniffer dogs coming onto buses looking for explosives.
I mean, I live in Belfast and I love this city, but I remember Belfast when it was a broken place. You know, I'm old enough to remember having to, you know, getting on the bus and them coming on with sniffer dogs to find out if there were bombs under the seats. You know, there was a ring of steel around Belfast. It wasn't
when
just
police and soldiers would surround Belfast with a so-called ring of steel. When you'd be watching the news each night, news of the latest bombings and shootings and maimings.
You know, I remember switching on the news each night and seeing the horror of people being shot or maimed or killed or, you know.
And just how awful that was.
That will always be imprinted on my mind. One of the horrific things is now looking back at all of the events that happened that are largely forgotten. The dates that don't stand out, the number of atrocities that happened that you can't place because it was so frequent.
She said she expressed concern that some of the more younger people in Northern Ireland now who didn't experience that just don't realise how grim it was, and therefore don't realise just how fragile things are here.
Who's she running against, and did you speak to them?
She is running against Gavin Robinson, who's a youngish DUP MP. And he's the one who defeated her in 2015.
I'm delighted that a new day has dawned in East Belfast.
And again in 2017. We tried to speak to Gavin Robinson, emailed at the DUP, spoke to them twice. And they said they would get back to us, but they still haven't.
Presumably, the Alliance thinks it has a chance because of Brexit. I mean, a majority in Northern Ireland did vote to remain. And so far, this process hasn't been great for it, including for unionists. There is a prospect of a complicated new trading system that could mean a border between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. I'm fascinated to know how people were feeling about all of this in a place like East Belfast. Tell me about some of the voters who you did meet.
The Harland and Wolff Social Club is a pub club off the Newtownards Road, and it was formed by workers from Harland and Wolff Shipyard as a place to meet and hang out.
Founder, you're the top man.
I'm not a top man.
Okay, my name's Roram.
John Davidson was very affable. He spent his entire career working in Harland and Wolff as a welder.
Belfast and Northern Ireland's got a powerful, strong maritime history. We're all proud of it. My father was a shipyard welder. My father's brothers were shipyard men. And my grandfather was riveters, so I come from a background of shipbuilders, as did 90% of the people in this area here of East Belfast.
And he's now 77, and he spent 50 years as the treasurer of the club, so he's very much a kind of a one-man institution there. And so he had a very strong and positive sense of his own Britishness. He's also proud to be an Irish man.
I feel you're Irish, whether you want to be or not. We are Irish, and I'm as proud to be Irish as I am as proud to be part of the United Kingdom.
But he was also very emphatic that he is first and foremost a British citizen, and he wishes to remain British, and that is the single most important factor for him. And so that's why he votes DUP. He said he did vote for the Alliance Party, I think, back in the 1970s, but then ever since he's voted for the DUP because he sees them as the best guarantor of the union. What was interesting also about John was a certain incoherence about Brexit. He feels that he's a very strong Brexiteer.
The vast majority of the Protestant unionist community will vote Brexit for reasons, because they look upon it as maintaining and strengthening the link with the UK as part of the union.
He cited a concern about immigration and also European Union bureaucracy as reasons to leave. And I asked, well, is Brexit now a risk to the union, which is your priority? And he said no.
Now that Boris Johnson's proposed Brexit deal actually draws a line between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK, and the DP and other unions are saying this is going to undermine the union, could actually be the slippery slope to United Ireland.
Yeah, they say it'll undermine the union. Boris is very adamant it'll not. He, as far as he's concerned, the union will he is a very strong supporter of the union.
It does not seem that Brexit is backfiring on unionism, and that actually the Brexit is going to weaken the union between Northern Ireland and the UK.
Well, I personally don't think so.
So he didn't think that Boris Johnson's deal, which effectively will mean checks between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK, was a problem?
No. He felt that it was not a problem. And that's odd because the DUP, whom he'll be backing, are the ones saying that this deal presents an existential threat to Northern Ireland. So I think his viewpoint reflects a certain degree of kind of confusion among unionists about just exactly what this deal represents, and also a reluctance on the part of many to renounce Brexit or to say that, you know what, Brexit has now become too risky, it's backfired, let's just drop it.
He sounds quite relaxed about Boris Johnson's deal. Did you find others who were worried about the Prime Minister's negotiation and what it could mean for unionism?
Across the road in the Great Eastern Pub, we met Jim, who's in his 60s, former blue-collar worker. And he had a much flintier view of Brexit and politics in general.
To be honest with you, he turned around and said he wouldn't do this, that and the other with the people in Northern Ireland. He said we're a part, an integral part of the UK. And then he's backstabbed the people of Northern Ireland to put a border up in the Irish Sea. It's going to make it harder coming from Britain to here, or from here to Great Britain, which we're supposed to be part of.
He felt that the proposed Brexit deal is a complete sellout, it's a betrayal, and that it also reflects the fact that so many people in England, Scotland and Wales don't care about Northern Ireland. And he was not just indignant, I mean, he was really hurt about that.
Well, if you think of it this way, we're only British when they need the likes of us.
He said, look, I mean, we're brought up to respect the Queen. I mean, we stand up for the national anthem and we stay standing until the thing is finished.
Well, we were brought up to respect the Queen and we would have stood till the end of the national anthem. That's the way we were, all brought up. And it's sort of disgusting when you see it over the mainland and not doing the same.
We are British, and that's that identity is means everything to him. And for that now to be under threat, and by a Conservative Prime Minister, no less, is something that's really difficult to swallow. And yet, Jim is kind of trapped in a labyrinth because he's also a Brexiteer. He wants to leave the European Union for lots of reasons. And so I said, okay, well, is that maybe then perhaps Brexit should be cancelled if the price is now too high? And he said, no, because this cancelling Brexit would reflect a victory for Sinn Féin and the IRA.
The kind of strange thing is that they see cancelling Brexit as a victory for Sinn Féin, when many would say that Brexit itself has put more strain on the union than anything for a very long time, and that this deal will effectively put a crack in the union. And there's talk of slipping down the slope towards reunification anyway. Isn't unionism more important to people like John and Jim than Brexit?
It is, and yet they are reluctant. They cannot bring themselves, firstly, to admit that Brexit maybe was a mistake in the first place, and that also that now is a time to make a tactical retreat and give it up. Now, it's interesting that Nigel Dodds, the DUP deputy leader, he's been quite explicit saying if the choice comes between Brexit or, you know, securing the union, then dump Brexit, forget Brexit, and let's just keep the union intact.
Is Brussels really intent on getting an agreement which provides an alternative to the backstop? They're not really serious. Then we're not going to have arrangements which are injurious to the economic and constitutional position of Northern Ireland.
But among these voters in East Belfast, they still want Brexit. Jim was emphatic that he would vote for the DUP because he feels that is the best safeguard for the union.
Did you meet any potential alliance voters?
We did. We met a couple. We met Robert McCourt, who is in his 60s, a retired engineer.
And as you probably gathered, I'll not be voting DUP, which doesn't leave much choice here, does it?
Born and bred in Belfast, and who was at school in class, actually, with Sammy Wilson, the DUP MP. But they then went on very different political journeys, while Sammy Wilson became perhaps the most kind of arch Brexiteer within the DUP. Robert went off to become an engineer and became not only an atheist, but also he set aside the kind of the unionist background in which he grew up to embrace a kind of a different vision for Northern Ireland.
Certainly, I've never ever been a unionist voter or a DUP voter. By background, you would assume that would be the way I would go, because although I don't practice any religion or whatever, within this part of the world, you either have to be a Protestant atheist or a Catholic atheist. So using any of their methods, the residual methods, I would be deemed to be a Protestant. Mm. So by logic, you would think that I would probably be leaning more toward voting in the Protestant direction.
He doesn't want to be either a unionist, really, or a nationalist. He just wants Northern Ireland to be able to live and to embody something that's different, that cannot just be defined by these narrow sectarian labels.
And what did he tell you about the election?
He will be voting for the Alliance Party, and he hopes and thinks that Naomi Long has a chance of winning. But long term, I mean, it is quite depressing, actually, talking to him in a way, because he has a rather bleak view of the future for Northern Ireland, to the point that he actually has a boat, and he sailed around the world on this boat, and his plan in the future is to eventually get back on that boat and leave Northern Ireland for good, partly because he just feels that despite the occasional breakthroughs by the Alliance Party, he feels that sectarian divisions here are just entrenched and are likely here to stay. And so at some point, he literally was going to get on a boat and sail off into the sunset.
So, yeah, I'd be buried somewhere at sea abroad.
much like we've heard in other parts of the country, it sounds like the story you were hearing, the message you were hearing, was complex and occasionally contradictory. I mean, the Conservatives have always been the party of the union, and yet there were passionate unionists who fear what a Boris Johnson majority could mean. And yet they were still largely pro-DUP and pro-Brexit. You also met an Alliance supporter who thinks the current situation has hardened sectarianism. Rory, you went to East Belfast looking to see if the tensions over Brexit could be making way for a new, more centrist politics. Is it fair to say you weren't convinced?
It didn't convince me. I feel that the old orange-green divisions, unionism versus nationalism, this old story that we've seen so many times in Northern Ireland is reasserting itself again, and it's intruding into the Remain Leave debate in Northern Ireland. And it was quite depressing, actually, that people felt identity, again, just would have to trump everything. A lot of the DUP voters we met said that they would be voting for the DUP, but actually with little enthusiasm. It's not that they believe passionately in this party. You know, these are kind of largely working class voters who are often kind of more quite a secular mindset. They don't like the religious slant of the DUP. They don't like their views on same-sex marriage. And often they actually said that they feel embarrassed by the DUP. And yet they will still go to the polls and vote for the DUP because they feel that they're the best safeguard in an uncertain, chilly world. And it was sad for people to vote under those circumstances or to feel that way, you know, to be voting for a party that you think is going to make things better, but you're going to vote for a party that you think may be the best chance of impeding an existential threat to your identity.
I don't know if you can sum this up, Rory, but what does this election mean for the future of Northern Ireland? And what does Brexit mean for Northern Ireland?
For Northern Ireland, Brexit means a profound threat to its stability, its peace and potential prosperity. It's thrown up in the air a whole kaleidoscope of questions, which we thought were gradually being settled by the Good Friday Agreement. It's reopened and polarized positions, and an unsettled environment that Brexit has created can only be bad news in a place like Northern Ireland. This election in Northern Ireland may resolve absolutely nothing. I think the DUP, they may lose a seat or two, but no more than that. Sinn Féin, likewise, may lose one seat, maybe gain a seat, but Sinn Féin will continue to abstain from Westminster as before. And so I think we're going to see the same deadlock and polarization here. Seems to be very little ability on the part of the political parties here to bridge their differences.
Rory, thank you very much.
Thanks, Anusha.
That was Rory Carroll, who is profiling the campaigns in Belfast for The Guardian and Observer. Do read his pieces this week on the website. Coming up, Suzanne Moore on what Prince Andrew's interview reveals about the monarchy and the media. Now, the fallout from Prince Andrew's controversial Newsnight interview is still coming thick and fast, from calls for him to answer to the FBI to accusations of him using the N-word to advisers. But The Guardian's Suzanne Moore says this hasn't just damaged him, it's been a disaster for the royal family.
I don't watch a lot of Saturday night TV, but as his interview had been widely trailed, I thought, well, I'll get the popcorn in. I had imagined that, having prepared for this interview, Andrew would have at least some good alibis and possible empathy with the actual victims of Epstein. And there was none, just none. So he was portraying himself as a victim. And of course, he came out with that memorable line that his basic problem was that he was too honourable. And I think that was the moment everybody just was like, what?
It was definitely the wrong thing to do. But at the time, I felt it was the honourable and right thing to do.
When he was rambling in that quite strange way about the possibility of that photo of him with his arm around Virginia Roberts being doctored, well, he has to prove that. I don't think people really believe that. I don't think Andrew is a kind of bad apple. I think he's part of a system that produces this sense of entitlement where he is allowed to do all these things with no consequences. No consequences at all, no accountability. I guess this interview was an attempt at some sort of accountability, but he seemed to feel no guilt. I mean, I think Andrew's just a person of limited intelligence brought up with immense privilege that we are all meant to somehow respect. I mean, another gobsmacking part of the interview was when he talked about working with the NSPCC and therefore having learned to look out for the signs of sexual abuse, and yet then being in a house on a private island where young teenage girls from 14 upwards were constantly available, and him not noticing that. I mean, what is going on? What is going on in his head? Before the interview, I am a Republican. I don't think we should have a royal family. I think this system of privilege and the idea that you are born to rule means that we can't have a proper democracy. But actually, when you see the products of these people who are born to rule, having absolutely no empathy for other people, it's not even just a political stance. You just think this is a very bad way to bring up a human being to be like this. That's how I felt about him. I think actually now the game is slightly up. And when the Queen dies, I mean, she's 90-something, and people look at the rest of the minor royals, they are not going to have that same sense of loyalty to them. And then the other part of this, of course, is that for the last few months, the focus of what's wrong with the royals has been on Meghan, who has apparently done really evil things like, cradled her pregnant bum, made Harry eat some vegetables, told them to be less racist. I mean, it's incredible that the focus has been on Meghan and not on Andrew's absolutely terrible behaviour. In a way, I think that this was a massive, massive coup by the BBC and Newsnight to get this interview, and I'm glad they did, but there is a part of me that thinks this interview should have taken place in a police station and not a palace.
That was Suzanne Moore. Do read her comment piece at theguardian.com. That's it for today. My thanks to Rory Carroll, Naomi Long and all the voters who spoke to us from East Belfast. And my thanks to Suzanne Moore. This episode was produced by Mithali Rao and Courtney Youssef. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.